Welcome, everybody, to the Locked On Lakers podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin. I'm joined by Pete Zayas. Pete, we have something to talk about. How about that?
We do. The Lakers never... Could you imagine doing, like, a podcast for another team?
No.
Like, we get more news to deal with. Like, it's never a dull moment.
So yeah.
Thank you, Lakers, for always being entertaining.
I like how... So we have on this channel or in this network, we have a Locked On NBA show. And I do the show for Fridays every single week anyway. But at least once or twice over the course of the off season, like when we get to this time of year, I make appearances on that Locked On NBA channel as well. Just because it's the Lakers. Like just because Lakers did something. So yeah. Shouts to the Lakers. The news that we're going to be talking about today, and really we're really going to suss this thing out. One, because I think it's an interesting topic that has multiple dynamics to it. And two, because it's August 20th and it's August 20th. We're going to talk about the Woj report, about the list of names that the Lakers are getting ready to work out, or at least look, you know, a little closer into to fill this center spot as a result of DeMarcus Cousins' injury. We are going to talk about what this means, not just from you know, the standpoint of whichever player they wind up acquiring, but what it means that they're looking into some of these players. In terms of the relationship with Anthony Davis, this is a pretty clear signal about something that we've already kind of known all along. This might also signal the end of their Lakers tenure for somebody at the very end of this roster, depending on how the Andre Iguodala thing gets worked out. So plenty of stuff to start here with. But I want to start, though, with... So the last time you and I spoke... I looked extremely haggard. I had a margarita in front of me on a Sunday, like late morning, because they were looking at Dwight Howard, right? Because Dwight Howard's name was linked to the Lakers. I didn't go full bore, like full rant on that episode, because I was still somewhat optimistic that the interest there didn't quite make sense. You and I talked after that show about where we kind of thought this was all coming from, and we kind of agreed that this felt like it was Dwight's camp trying to get his name out there.
Yeah, and there have been some reports after that indicate that may be the case, but they are supposed to be working him out, so he's one of the three guys that they're working out, so we're not necessarily out of those woods, so to speak, but yeah. I do think that the interest is driven from that end.
It just always felt, so not to go full... you know, tinfoil hat conspiracy theorist, and not to throw some people under the bus fully here, but I had never heard of the first person who leaked or who reported Dwight's interest in or the Lakers' interest in Dwight Howard. And usually with those things, and I'm not here to act as some kind of gatekeeper for Lakers information. That's not what I mean by this whatsoever. There are cases where news gets broken by somebody we have never seen coming, right? But that still doesn't mean I can't be skeptical at the very beginning of that process. And that's kind of where I stood on the initial leaking that the Lakers were interested in Dwight Howard. The confirmation of that report came from Shams Charania, whom we know is close to Dwight Howard's agent because of the annual "I promise Dwight Howard is actually maturing" articles that get written every year, right? So, you know, you combine those things and you also add to that the person who would be signing Dwight Howard was the agent of Kobe Bryant back at the end of Dwight Howard and Kobe Bryant's relationship, where Dwight Howard said he would come back to the Lakers. He would go back to the Lakers, and this is all reported, but he would have gone back to the Lakers had the Lakers amnestied Kobe. And just given the way Rob Pelinka talks about Kobe, with the reverence that he talks about him there, that doesn't feel like the kind of thing you move past really ever, right? Especially not to the point where you would give you would be the last opportunity this guy has at staying in the league, right? So all those things kind of came together, and it made me optimistic that it didn't seem all that likely. How would you feel, or how did you feel about that confluence of angles to the story, and why I saw them as reasons to be optimistic if I didn't want to see Dwight on the Lakers.
Yeah, I mean, though, I do think that those things all factor in. NBA is also, it's such a small industry that there's probably some let bygones be bygones to it. But in this particular instance, I mean, it's such a unique, you know, with Kobe's agent as the guy. And it was like a, and it wasn't just the, we want him amnestied. It was the, like, so look, let's reverse engineer this from the fact that the Lakers want to win a championship, right?
Right.
Kobe's gripe with Dwight Howard was that he didn't take basketball seriously enough. Kobe had been to, what was it, 7 or 8 finals and had won 5 of them and was always on a team or just about that was a contender. Kobe knows what it takes. Kobe knows, like, the cloth that you have to be cut from to be able to do this. And it's funny, I even tweeted this out. We know that clip of him calling Dwight soft, right? But Kobe loved Powell, right? Like, Powell was described as soft from time to time, right? This is obviously continuing my out of context quotes for hating Powell. I don't know
why you
Powell
hate this guy so much. Yeah, wow.
But Powell could be, but Kobe loved Powell because Powell wasn't soft. Powell wasn't physical, but that's not the same thing. Mm-hmm. Powell brought it when it needed to be brought. And it was a mentality thing that Dwight Howard does not have. And that permeates. We talked about the locker room last time, but also on the court. Like, he's a guy who's notorious for playing hard sometimes.
Yeah.
And when you need role players, we've got our stars on this team.
Yeah.
We're looking for a backup big. We need that guy to play hard. We need him
every
to talk
every single
defense,
time they're on the court.
Every single night, right? Because he's getting, what, 15, maybe 20 minutes a game?
Yeah.
He's got to go balls to the wall for that time, and that's just not Dwight Howard.
No.
So all of those factors combined, I would be very surprised. But again, they're working him out, so we'll see.
I just don't know. Now, Dwight is the kind of guy who would show up to a workout and wow you, right? But I think – the other thing to keep in mind here is the relationship between Pelinka and Kobe. It's not the typical agent-player relationship, right? I believe Kobe is the godfather or Pelinka is a god. Maybe it's like a double godfather relationship with their kids. They are that tight. We know that Pelinka talks to Kobe about all this stuff, and that's where that factors into, you know, Kobe's thoughts on Dwight factor in on this all along. So I wanted to start there just because It behooved Dwight's camp to get his name attached to the Lakers a hell of a lot more than it behooved the Lakers to get their name attached to Dwight Howard. And I thought it was also really telling that somebody from the Lakers talked to Ramona and said, no, this is Dwight's people. That's, you have to notice that kind of stuff too. So I thought that was all very interesting. And what we're going to do is we're going to take a quick second. We're going to get into some of these other names. Joakim Noah is listed here, Dwight Howard, Mo Spates, Marcin Gortat. I believe there's a few more. No, I think that might be it.
That was it that Woj tweeted out. Yeah.
So that's the list from Adrian Wojnarowski. So we'll talk about those names there, if anybody really sticks out, who makes the most sense among those players here in a bit. So like we already know, Dwight Howard is going to be on this list of players to work out for the Lakers. Now, I wonder if Dwight can even work out for the Lakers while he's a member of the Grizzlies. Like, I feel like he has to be bought out before that something like that would take place, but it's August.
I think you can reach out to a team and get permission. I know they had permission to talk to him and work out for him. I'm sure that's something that if you can get the team to agree, which Memphis, they're going to they'd rather buy him out. That saves them money. So that's the reason they hold on to him. But I think they can make it happen under league rules.
Yep. Noah is a free agent. Mo Spates is a free agent, as is Marcin Gortat. So those are the names there, four names thus far that we know are attached to the Lakers. Of those four, who fits the best, do you think?
For me, it's Noah and the next guy is a distant second.
Yeah.
I mean, you get pretty close to a title, if not all the way there, with LeBron James, Anthony Davis, and really good defense. Mm-hmm. And of the guys available, he's the best defender by far. And he's not valueless on offense because of his passing. That he's as good of a passer as Boogie is, right? Mm-hmm. If we want to replace that. And he's big enough to bang with guys, right? Not nearly the skill level as Boogie, but he does... He replicates him, you know, to some degree.
Yeah.
And so for me, like, the guy that can be the best defender, and it's also like most Spates has championship experience. He can shoot from the mm-hmm. perimeter, which is something nobody else can. But if we want to have, I'm not talking during the course of 82 games. I'm talking like during the playoffs and toward a title run. If we want to have a guy who can stretch the floor, just put AD at the five,
yeah.
right? If we want to have that arrow in our quiver of being able to have a guy who can bang with fives while sliding AD to the four, while still being able to facilitate offense and can defend, it's Noah. You know, like that's something that Noah, there's a place for Noah in a playoff game, just as there is in the regular season. Whereas I think for like a Mo Spates would be a minutes eater, which is okay. You need some guys like that, but he'd be a minutes eater during the regular season. I think Noah can actually play in those high leverage situations.
I was already on Team Noah as of last night. Right? Like, fervently and adamantly placed in Team Joakim Noah. And then that Devin Booker clip came out, and yes. I'm ready to run out and buy myself a freaking jersey. Here's the thing. The Lakers haven't had that kind of a presence in a minute, right? Mm-hmm. That kind of guy who... So it was Ron Artest, I think, was the closest thing to it, right? Mm-hmm. Where somebody who wasn't a... necessarily a star, but was willing to go out there and just get in people's heads and throw their body around. Just go out there and make a mess of the game. Kind of like, did you ever see the movie 3000 or 300?
Yes, I did.
Remember the Athenians or whatever it was where he said like, oh, Athenians, they run in there, they make a mess of everything, but boy, they would die, you know, just as happily as anybody or whatever it was. And mm-hmm. and I want that kind of a player. I want that kind mm-hmm. of a mentality on the Lakers. And this team is really kind of missing it because LeBron isn't that kind of a guy. He'll go out there and he'll dominate a game, but he's not that kind of a guy. He's not going to get in somebody's face. Davis, same kind of thing. They could really use somebody like Noah who is going to bark when the time comes to bark. And not just at the opposing players, but as a center fielder, uh-huh. quarterback, as a defensive player.
Absolutely, and at your own team. He's going to say,
yeah.
This was a guy who was going at LeBron in, you know, when he was with the Bulls and when he was in his prime. Was
incredible.
Right, and they would just talk and talk. Like, you need guys, I don't want the vets to be scared of LeBron.
Yeah.
You gotta call LeBron out. He's a player just as they are, right?
Yeah.
And you've got to hold everybody accountable. Accountability is such a huge part of what a championship team is. And Noah's exactly that type of guy.
Yeah.
And he's also, I think there's some value. I mean, this can be an argument for Dwight too, but there's some value in a guy who used to be one of the elite players in the yeah. game. Like, Noah was really good once upon a time. Mm-hmm. And that when you brought up Ron Artest's name, it reminded me of that too. He was really good.
Yeah.
And those guys, when they accept what their role is, which is what a guy like Noah is like, and they're defensive minded, that can transition very well into yeah. a role play, right? Absolutely. We talk about Vince Carter's ability to shoot. Well, that's the defensive version of it, of mm-hmm. what it looks like. And so having a guy like that with that sort of mentality, really, I mean, Rick Fox was that type of guy for us during the three-peat years, and then yeah, Meta and all that. So yeah, we're lacking those type of guys. And I really like our locker room, but a lot of the guys are like, they're nice guys
yeah.
in some ways. And like, I don't want to say they don't have dog in them, but having one guy who's going to say the uncomfortable thing,
yeah.
like that's important. And Noah's going to say the uncomfortable thing.
Yeah. I mean, I would have loved to seen that clip with Booker continue to play because I'm convinced Noah sent that defender over there to double Booker again. Like I
absolutely. Yeah. I would have doubled him as Noah. I would have doubled him every possession.
Off the ball. I would, before the ball was passed in. I would have run over there and doubled again. Absolutely.
Yeah. Like, work on your game.
Yeah. Well, that was the funny. All right. Quick tangent. It was funny to me that he was like, hey, man, we're out here to work on our game. And apparently Tony Jones, I believe his name is, the guy who writes for the Utah Jazz, said he spoke to a few players. And there is a bit of an unwritten rule that, like, you don't double in that spot because you're working on those isolation plays or whatever. Devin Booker gets double teamed often enough to where he should have handled that trap better than he did. Like, he just kind of like wandered, dribbled into a corner spot, or just pivoted a bunch in a corner spot, took one dribble towards the trap, lost the ball out of bounds, and threw a temper tantrum. Like, it shows you need to work on it.
Well, think of the thought process here. I get this all year, and we're here to work on our game.
Yeah. But.
Well, if you get it all year, that you are working on your game. And if that is an unwritten rule amongst those guys, and yes, amongst NBA players, there are, you know, to me, the unwritten rules are like, don't go for a chase down block.
Yeah.
Like, don't contest me when I'm already up in the air. It's all like, don't get me hurt type of based.
Yeah.
Whereas in the NBA, you got to go for that block or whatever. Those are acceptable unwritten rules. Don't double team me, man. Get the hell out of here.
Yeah.
Like, that's part of the game, especially when you're a primary scorer like that. And did you see Will Conroy? He played at Washington, I think, and he was with the Lakers for a cup of coffee. He was a training camp invite, I want to say 12 years ago or so. Mm-hmm. And he tweeted out, he was like, we doubled Kobe every time during open run.
Yeah.
And he never complained. He also never passed. He shot the ball and was like, you better send three.
Yeah.
And that is, it's mentality. Mentality is so important in the NBA.
I also feel like Booker is a little too young to be doing the whole unwritten rule shit. It'd be one thing if it was LeBron out there saying, hey guys, come on. You know, like, which, by the way, we know he wouldn't do that. He would find the open player, he would make the team better, and the team would win as a result of the other team trying to double team him in a setting where you know you aren't practicing the rotations on that double team anyway. So it's all it's going to take is like two passes to break that trap. So, but Devin Booker's what, 24 maybe? 23, 24?
I think he's 22, actually, maybe 23.
You're not some dude with insane amounts of mileage on your track record here, where you're it's such a tough ask to break a trap. Get out of here, stop.
He's a guy where, like, I absolutely love his game, his offensive game on tape. He's so skilled, and I cannot stand his mentality. I can't think of a player there where there's a wider difference between how I feel about their game and then how they think about the game and, like, their mentality about the game. Like, for me, the worst, going to Phoenix is like the worst thing, because if you go in as a pretty boy prima donna type, you're going to keep that. And if you don't, and you came in as a hard worker, nobody else is working hard.
Yeah, right.
So you're going to, like, lose some of that. Yeah. Right. So I don't know. Like, yeah, that's just an awful basketball situation. And just don't. Could you imagine a San Antonio Spur being at one of those open men? Like, don't double team me. It's hard. I get this. Well,
Noah's face was perfect. Noah was sitting there looking at him like, what?
Is this dude serious right now? Yeah.
This guy.
Yeah.
We're not trying to win? What game are we playing? What? It was ridiculous. And shouts to Noah for calling him out on it. And I hope, I'm sure that the next play he sent that same double over there to him and just kept on. Because what's Devin Booker going to do? Fight Joakim Noah? Get out of here. Sure. That's going to end well. All right. We're going to take a quick second here. Get back to the topic at hand. I want to talk about what this means, what the Lakers looking at centers means for the relationship with them and Anthony Davis, because I think there's a very clear line to draw here. And then also what this might mean for guys at the end of the roster right now, because we know the Lakers had intentions for that 15th roster spot as it was. So we're going to take a quick second. When we come back, we're going to get to all of that. All right, so we'll start with what this means. So it makes sense just in general for the Lakers to have a third center regardless, even if Anthony Davis is getting ready to play or doesn't want to play mm-hmm. the center. Like, it just – it doesn't make sense to go into a season with JaVale McGee as your only center, as we right. found out last year. Right. And that – like, the Lakers got lucky, quite frankly, that Zubats was – took the step forward that he did when Tyson Chandler realized, oh, yeah, that's right, I'm ancient, right? So from that standpoint, yes, just in general, it makes sense for the Lakers to add another center here to make up for losing DeMarcus Cousins. But I also think, like, how hard they're working on this and the kind of diligence that they're doing on this kind of shows me that, yeah, this really hammers home that Anthony doesn't really want to play a bunch of center next year. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we've already talked about this on the level of it's kind of too bad. I get it being more of a situational thing, and some of the wear and tear makes it a viable point to make from his standpoint. But how do you take that if you're rolling with that conclusion to draw?
You know, I don't love it. I'm also not the person banging with other fives yeah. and whatnot. I hope that the Lakers. So look, enough of the rest of the league goes small that if a team's going small ball, like Anthony Davis shouldn't have a problem playing the five right. spot then, right? Mm-hmm. Can we like sync up those minutes where like, all right, you're trotting out a glorified four out of the five spot. Hey, let's get those minutes to Anthony yeah. Davis at the five, because that takes away the reason why you don't want him playing that spot and actually gets him into that best position. Mm-hmm. It's not something that I like, but it looks like that's what it's going to be. Mm-hmm. I think it's going to cost us a couple of wins, and I think that in a Western Conference that's like this, that's a big deal. I also fully expect that come playoff time that they lean on that more heavily. Yeah. So, you know, to answer your question, I don't love it. I hope that there are some creative solutions that can make everyone happy.
I know people are getting kind of sick of me ragging on Rondo, but I just want to make this point before we move on. This is now two roster spots where a player that probably shouldn't be on that team is now on that team, right? Like, the Lakers are now going to employ a center in part because Anthony Davis doesn't want to play center as much, right? Now, again, it makes sense. It, like, the center spot is less of a gripe than with Rondo, but because Rondo is on this team, like, that's going to cost the Lakers, and this is going to segue us into the next thing. That's going to cost the Lakers probably Troy Daniels if and when Andre Iguodala becomes available, right? And so it's just roster spots are a limited resource, and using them on players like Rajon Rondo, it just hurts. Like, that just takes a toll. It's going to show up somewhere. We already know it's probably going to come up if Andre Iguodala becomes available. And then come season time, it's going to hurt the Lakers because he's going to be on the court, right? And it's a bummer. How do you – if there is a player, though, let's say the Lakers sign a center here. Let's let our dreams come true and let it be Noah. Let's say the Lakers sign that guy. Now they have 15 guys on their roster, and the Grizzlies at that point say, okay, we're going to waive Iguodala. Who do you wish them well, wish them on their way moving forward at the end of the roster?
So I actually did some looking. I looked into this topic a little bit okay. because after our last podcast, I was curious about what can you cut Boogie mm-hmm. and not screw him over, which mm-hmm. is what we don't want to do. And what I found is that the answer is you probably can. You have to get permission from the NBA to let him rehab and use the facilities and have access to all of that. And in the past, the NBA has granted that. And the NBA, that's not something that is worth it to the NBA to fight that battle and then have yeah. the players' union be like, what the hell? Like, right. why not? You know? So I think the direction you probably go in is to request that from the NBA, cut Boogie, but give him all of the benefits of being on the team. And then you just fit Noah into that spot while retaining that open roster spot mm-hmm. for Iggy if he becomes available. If not, Troy Daniels is the obvious guy to yeah. be let go in that whole framework.
I don't know why the NBA doesn't have, like, an IR. Mm-hmm. Like, it just seems like such a sensical thing, especially given the number of injuries that you have over the course of a season. It doesn't really make sense that you wouldn't have at least one IR spot. Like, baseball has, like, the 60-day disabled mm-hmm. list. You have the NFL that has, like, the PUP list, the players mm-hmm. that are unable to perform. And that can take up an entire year where that player can still use the facilities, and you have team control over that player as well. Here with Boogie, it would make a lot of sense because, so one thing, and again, I don't like to really put this out into the universe in general just because I don't want Boogie to try to rush back, but you know he's going to try to. Mm-hmm. Like, you know he's the issue with cutting Boogie at that point is that if he does or when he does push himself super hard to be able to come back at some point this year, well then, does that now means that you cannot bring him back? Like, that's not a thing that you can do. Otherwise, you then have to cut somebody else. Mm-hmm. And I don't even know if you can cut and then bring back somebody in the course of one year. I don't think you can do that.
I'm not sure how it works with guaranteed contracts. It happens sometimes with like 10-day contract guys yeah. and all of that. So that I can look into that as well. Yeah. I'd be very surprised if Boogie's back on a court.
Me too.
And I think there's value in the 9 months of Troy Daniels, even if he is that guy that's right on the cusp of getting cut. It's, you get more value out of that than the hope and a prayer that Boogie can yeah. get back by. And even if it's by the playoffs, it's probably mid playoffs, even if they're in a championship run. Like, how do you incorporate a guy back into that? Does that mean that Noah goes back to the bench or, you right. know, to DNPs and things like that? It's just, I think it's tough to work out. I still think that that's the right way to go considering the severity of the injury.
Yeah. It's going to be interesting to see how they handle all of this. There are courses of action that they can take. And as of right now, they're handling this about as well as they could, right? I would rather they not entertain the Dwight Howard thing at all. So obviously it's not perfect right now. I would rather the whole dynamic between Noah and Kurt Rambis not matter at all. But again, those are things that are just the way things are. But as of right now, I don't really have any complaints about the way that they've handled things thus far. And look, if they do walk away with Joakim Noah, and this is the last thing I want to end on before we call it a day. We've talked a lot about how losing Boogie hurts the Lakers' margin for error, right? Takes it almost all away. Basically, and you're now asking for best case scenarios across the roster in ways that we didn't want to have to hope for heading into the year. How much of that margin for error does that bring back? So, like, percentage wise, would you say?
Oh boy, it's tough to put a percentage on it. So Noah doesn't come close to the best case scenario of Boogie.
No,
right? But Noah's a good player, and like I have concerns about his health too, right?
Yeah.
But anybody who is available right now, you're going to have big questions about. Let's say, I don't know. It's a couple of percent. It's not a huge thing. He's a backup center that's a 15-20 minute per night type of guy. But I do think he can give you playoff minutes, like mm-hmm. credible, I can defend my position and I can facilitate the offense type of minutes. That's important, you yeah. know? And so, like, that type of guy, I think also, like, who they're looking at, we didn't really get into Gortat or, you know, not even into Mo Spates all that much, but the fact that Kenneth Faried isn't on there is really indicative that they want a bigger yeah. type of guy, a bigger body. So I think that's interesting, and it falls in line with their, you know, their idea of what they want to do with AD and not have him bang with fives. But it's just a couple of percentage points, but every bit matters, right? We're talking the margins here. How yeah. about you?
The way I would kind of put it is, I think Cousins did so much for your margin for error that he lifted the potential ceiling of the team, whereas, like, Noah is just helping in the margin for error department, right? Mm-hmm. He is just break glass in case of emergency, where the Lakers are going to need that. Like, there's importance. There's value in that. I think it's the right move to bring in somebody like that. Spates and Gortat, I'm less high on. Like, at least with Noah, like, Noah doesn't provide the spacing, but he isn't an insane liability in any asset or facet of the game in the way that, like, Mose Bates definitely is on the defensive end, and and Marcin Gortat was by the time that the end of last year came around, like, he and Tyson Chandler were like the like two corpses Spider-Man pointing at each other.
You know, my understanding is the Lakers almost signed Marcin Gortat at the end of last season, and then they had a couple of bad losses that essentially put them out of the playoff race for good. Mm-hmm. And then all parties were like, oh, never mind. So it wouldn't surprise me at all if Gortat is the guy they go with. But yeah, he was looking pretty crispy by the end of his tenure there. So and the thing about Noah regarding the specifics of his game, he can defend the perimeter a little bit, right? Yeah. Like, you don't get any of that with Gortat, right? He's just strictly drop coverage guy. Noah can come up a little bit higher, a little more mobile. That's actually something he does better than Boogie would have, and so that would be actually an upgrade in one area. But yeah, Gortat wouldn't surprise me, but he wasn't looking so great that last stretch.
Yeah, I would agree. All right, that'll do it for this episode of the Locked On Lakers podcast. I want to just really quickly reference that Kobe and Pau are the pineapple and ham pizza combination.
So we're not ending the show right now. So pineapples. Let's talk about pineapples on their own for a second.
All right, let's go.
Have you ever eaten hot pineapple for a reason, like on its own?
No.
Of course not, because it's not supposed to friggin' be hot. It's not supposed to be on a pizza. It's not supposed – I would even argue beyond, like, there's some other dishes that you put pineapple on or beside that it's not really a great fit for that either, right? But pineapple is unbelievable. Pineapple's my favorite fruit. If you have cold – I've got some pineapple in the freezer right now that I'm going to go downstairs and then I'm gonna go to town on that, right? Uh-huh. I love pineapple. Pineapple is not the problem in this. It is just this
so you're saying pizza's abomination. The problem. Wow, I can't believe you hate pizza.
Pizza's not the problem either, right?
Okay.
So them together, though, pineapple isn't supposed to be hot. Like, how do you eat it like that? And then the texture of it doesn't go with pizza?
It's not. All right. When was the last time you actually bit into a ham and pineapple pizza?
When I was a kid. So you're talking 20 years.
I think you should try it again. Because the texture does actually kind of work with it. Like, you're thinking of pineapple in the sense of, like, when it's by itself, which that's not the case here. It's just like Pau by himself wasn't as great as people want to remember him as, right? But Pau with Kobe and in that kind of cooked environment, well, then now you're talking about an all-time combo.
But we're not talking like a dominant wing and a skilled big man here, right? We're talking about, like, these are two isolation scorers trying to share the ball and it not working out. This is like prime Carmelo Anthony next to James Harden or something these are not skill sets that complement each other.
Pineapple can't carry its own pizza. So no, we're not talking about two isolation wings. We're talking about a topping that is only supposed to be complementary to one specific other topping. In this case, a combination. And you know, that Lakers team, if you really look at it, like a Phil Jackson as the head coach with somebody as volatile as Kobe, and then you have somebody as soft-spoken as Pau was. You had Lamar Odom as this, like, weird sixth man, and Ron Artest was is like this odd topping in an odd addition to that in and of himself. But that's, like, one of my favorite Lakers teams of all time. It didn't make much sense on paper, and then it won a championship.
It totally made sense. That team totally made sense. They were great passers. You had the one, like, dominant thing that's carry. This is like like when you make a meal, you've got your dominant, like, your main course. And then you've got your sides that are meant to complement.
Yeah, ham. Kobe was the ham. Kobe was he was the ham. He was like, and then you had like Bynum was the bacon in this sense, I think. You know, where he was just kind of sprinkled in a little bit across the board whenever you needed him. You had the spice that was Ron Artest, the sweetness that was Pau and Lamar. It was great. It was a great pizza. It was a great pizza team.
No. But who's the pizza?
Huh?
Who is the pizza? Who's the actual pizza?
The 2010 Lakers. That's the
No.
Wait, what do are you asking, like, who would be the bread? Like, who would be the crust?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying, is everything in a pizza plays a role, right? Okay. Like, if you want a pizza to be more sweet, don't throw a friggin' pineapple on it. Use a different sauce, right? No. That's where you get the sweetness from.
How dare
you. Is from the tomato sauce.
No, right? I don't think
the
so.
The bread.
So, like, I guess the crust or the bread here is Phil Jackson and, like, the triangle offense and the culture that was. That was an important factor there. Derek Fisher was, like, this sauce that covered up a lot of issues that could have also popped up because of how
I'll just let you roll with this, but
I don't understand how you can. I don't think, like, you're thinking of pineapple only in the one context that you prefer it, but it's an oddly flexible. No, it's not that flexible. It's only good in this other sense. No, because it's good.
No. It's not good. It's not good in that sense, which is why it's not good in other senses. We've just
so you don't like it. You don't like it in, like, teriyaki food too, though. Like, that warm pineapple doesn't do it for you either.
It does not. Like, I would prefer it on the side. Like, I understand the flavor combinations are similar, but it being on its own, not being dunked in teriyaki sauce and all of that, or charred, like, people do that with pineapple too. Pineapple's amazing, and it like, people like to defile it in all these different ways that I just can't get behind. Like, I just can't.
You're like one of those awful baseball purist fans.
That's the thing, is, like, there's a twist to all of this, is that I'm a pineapple stan. Like, people didn't realize, like, my whole angle of coming to this, but, like, pineapples are amazing. Stop fucking with them.
They're so much better. They can be used elsewhere. Like, it's so weird to say, like, I love this thing, but I don't want more of it elsewhere in my food. It's such an odd stance. It's so weird.
No, put it off to the side. Put it off. If you want to have pineapple, get yourself a regular meat lovers type of pizza. Have you a side of pineapple. Don't defile them by mixing the two. Don't friggin' cook the pineapple and get rid of all of the flavors and the texture of it.
All right, but, like, what happens if you take a bite of pineapple, right? You take a bite because you know it can get stuck in your teeth. It has that kind of a texture. So you take a bite of that pineapple. You don't know that there's some mixed in your teeth still. You take a bite of that pizza, and then, holy crap, I just had pineapple pizza, and it got so much better. You're going to sit there and ask yourself, why was that one bite so much better than all the other ones?
No, I will not be asking myself that. And the thing that's gotten stuck in my teeth, it really doesn't have any flavor anymore. It's just the stringy fibers and whatnot, right? So, no, I reject your premise.
It's so weird. It's such an odd stance. I love this food, but I don't want it anywhere other than this one. Do you like pineapple ice cream? Like, do you like pineapple ice cream? Coconut pineapple ice cream? That's good.
Sure, because it's got a flavor in it. It's not actual pineapple, though.
No, they're
chunks in it, but at least they go together. Ice cream's friggin' cold, right?
Uh-huh.
Like, you can at least get it, at least on the temperature end of things.
Okay.
But yeah, I would eat pineapple sherbet or something like that.
So, do you like pineapple in your cocktails? Like a pina colada or like a Mai Tai with like a nice little spear of pineapple on the top of it?
So when you make those type of drinks, mm-hmm. you generally aren't putting it in the drink, right? It's a little garnish. Pina colada
is in the drink. Like,
well, it's one of the flavors. So, like, pineapples and coconuts, mm-hmm. tropical fruits, yeah, they go together.
Okay.
Like, my problem isn't I don't think that pineapple should never be combined with anything else.
Mm-hmm.
It's just that this particular combination.
You're and a many pineapple of the other, segregationalist.
I'm just saying pineapple should stay with its own kind.
You want pineapple to be separate and equal.
It's got dark all of a sudden for no reason.
All right, I'm going to end this thing before we... Have a great rest of your day, everybody. Make somebody else's, and we'll talk to you about pineapple tomorrow.